and at the apex of social change, providing an outlet for political activists to air grievances, educate listeners, and shine light upon government abuse and corruption. As such, this media played an indispensable role in broadcasting the voices of those involved in the Arab Spring of 2010 and 2011. Community radio and media in general in the Middle East and North Africa have faced legal restriction and repression from governments across the region. I interviewed some key players in this region's community radio movement to discuss state barriers to the granting of FM licenses, journalistic freedom, and the future of community radio in the Middle East and North Africa. We begin in Tunisia, where earlier this year, HICA, the Independent High Authority for Audiovisual Communication, granted 8 new licenses for the establishment of associative radio channels in the country, lifting Tunisia's number of community radios with FM licenses to 10. I spoke to Francesco D'Azio, the Secretary General of AMARC, the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters, about Tunisia's new licenses. Tunisia is the only North African country with a radio landscape open to civil society. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, after the so-called Arabic Spring, the Tunisia government went through a very serious reform approach. So there is a new assembly which was elected with the aim to rewrite the constitution. And among the different things that have happened on the political level, Tunisia has witnessed for the first time in North Africa the creation of an independent regulatory authority. AMARC has established since the beginning a very, very strong and open dialogue. Through our experts and through our members, we succeed to put in place a platform where we could discuss and amend and propose the political steps to undertake in order to guarantee a fully pluralistic landscape in Tunisia. And thanks to the support of many other international NGOs, like Reporters Sans Frontières, but also thanks to the European Union, who granted some important projects in order to put in place independent radio stations in the country. So through a wide alliance of different stakeholders, at the end, we succeed to establish a roadmap, and at the end of the roadmap, the AICA has now granted some new license for the community radio stations and the community radio movement. This is very important on two different levels. The first one is that the authority and the government recognize the audiovisual landscape is no longer in the hands of the monopoly of the public service or commercial services. So there is the full acknowledgement of the community media sector, which is something important because even in Europe we don't have this full acknowledgement, especially in some countries in Central and Eastern Europe. And the second one, after the acknowledgement, is to grant licenses and to grant the possibility to be on air. There is a third aspect which is very important. Until now in Tunisia, all the broadcasters had to rent a kind of service provided by a state company, which is called ONT, Office National de Télécommunication. Just to give you an idea, for an independent broadcaster, in order to have access to a transmitter and cover the capital, so Tunis, they had to spend something like 60,000 to 70,000Canadian dollars per year, while a single transmitter costs no more than 5,000. So you can see the huge difference between the amount of money that was asked before and the truly cost of independent broadcasters. So thanks now to the efforts that we made in this last year, the monopoly of ONT is also finished. And so now broadcasters are free to have their own transmitters and their own antenna systems. At the end, the granting of license means full acknowledgement of the community radio sector. have on air many radio stations with a national union gathering them together, and thirdly, the end of the monopoly of this Office National de Telecommunication. So these are the big achievements that are behind the granting of new license, and this is why we consider that this is an historical step, not only for Tunisia, but for all the countries that participated in the Arabic Springs and which are now in very complicated situations, and I think especially to Libya, Egypt, and the other neighboring countries.
How would you facilitate the creation of similar radio landscapes in other nations in that region?
Well, in other nations, the situation is very, very difficult because this constitutional process is not taking place. In Egypt, Egypt witnessed two different revolutions after the end of the Mubarak regime. The first one was against Mubarak, and the second one was against Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood. So at the end, now the army has again the full control of the situation on the ground, and despite the existence of a nice and very original movement of independent media, these independent media are on a corner because they don't have access to frequencies, and of course the army has a very, very strict control on broadcasters. So they keep broadcasting on the internet, which is of course a solution in the short term, but which is not, you know, the solution in the medium and long term, because we want to have access to airwaves. So this is fundamental. In Morocco, there is also a very, very important movement of civil society organizations, and there is also an independent regulatory authority, like in Tunisia, but unfortunately, it is impossible to establish dialogue in order to advance on the political level and recognize this sector. In Libya, well, it's a big mess, and unfortunately, in a war situation, is now completely possible to establish a political roadmap leading to the acknowledgement of independent broadcasters. So that's why we consider Tunisia very, very important. It is the model of democracy. About community media, we don't talk about the possibility to broadcast. We talk about freedom of expression. We talk about public goods like frequencies are. And this is, and in the articulation between expression and public goods, it is the key element that we have to take into consideration. Tunisia achieved this debate. In the other countries, it is still impossible. In other countries, the access to official sources of information is still very difficult.
I want to go back to what you were talking about previously with Arab Spring. I was wondering if you think that the Tunisian revolution will have a clear impact on the content produced by these individual radio channels. In other words, is there a general political consensus among these new stations about the manner in which they will operate and the type of material that they'll broadcast, or will they clash ideologically?
Well, I think it's a mix of things. I mean, before the independent broadcasting, Tunisia already had a very, very strong movement of independent bloggers. And sometimes the radio stations born just as a follow-up of the blogging experience. At the beginning of the year 2000, in 2004, 2005, 2006, many independent bloggers started to criticize the government. Many bloggers ended in jail. Many bloggers also died for critical positions against the dictatorship of Ben Ali. So I consider this as a natural follow-up of this movement. I would also like to remind that during the revolution, where these radio stations were still not on air, the civil society organizations, but also youngsters and again bloggers, put in place very original ways in order to produce and distribute information. So some radio stations were just on the internet, but produced with several decentralized centers and through technologies like Skype they could have, a joint program coming from different cities, Kasserine, Sidi Bouzid, Tunis, Gaza, etc., etc. So I think that it is really a mix of all these elements that created this movement and this situation currently going on.
What are some of the different levels that AMARC has specifically worked on in order to bring these Tunisian channels to life?
Well, you know, the actions of AMARC has been on different layers. The first one was, of course, the most important. It was the political dialogue with institutions, with the regulatory authorities, participating and drafting documents, sharing the best practices, experiences that we have in Europe, but also in Africa and in other countries. So this has been the first level. The second one has been the training and capacity building for radio groups. Of course, the concept of community media is quite new, so we spent a lot of time and energy in order to explain people what does it mean, community media, the horizontal approach, a gender balance approach, the issue of the management, and so on and so forth, which was a very, very important element in order to create a kind of awareness towards civil society organizations and independent broadcasters. And of course, the last level was the technical support for these radio stations. As I told you previously, the system was managed by a state company, so it was completely forbidden to have, you know, transmitters for the radio stations or antenna systems. Well, AMARC also facilitates the entrance of technical devices in the country through our activists, and of course it created a kind of domino effect which ended with the end of the OMT and its monopoly. So now radio stations are broadcasting with their own devices. So I would say the three levels, you know, political level, capacity building, training, journalistic independence of journalists, and so on and so forth, and then the technical one. Also, we have to consider that for a long time, Tunisian journalists have been used to make propaganda to the dictatorship rather than independent information. So even the concept of information, of local information, of radio de proximité, so proximity radio stations for our listeners, and the creation of a truly community of listeners, which is also part of the social sustainability of a radio station, all these elements have been very important to discuss and to introduce to our colleagues.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Odiazio, Secretary General.
It was my pleasure.
Been at the forefront of radio freedom in North Africa. However, neighboring Egypt has not experienced the same shift toward transparency in telecommunications governance and media freedom. I spoke with Ahmed Sami, director of the Andalus Institute for Tolerance and Anti-Violence Studies, and the founder of Radio Holay Tinya, or Our Freedom Radio, about the current radio landscape in Egypt. Tunisia is held up as kind of the model of revolutionary change after the uprisings of 2010 and 2011. Do you think that the Tunisian model can or should be imported by Egypt? And do you see any similarities between Egypt and Tunisia in terms of media freedom?
I'm 100% agree with you. The Egyptian, there is a different context between the Egyptian media context and the Tunisian media context. But the freedom for internet radios and for the FM radios, community radios is much free in Tunisia. I would love that we import that legal model and that very well understanding by the government about the role of community media. But unfortunately, I know my government. They are not that easy. This is a very settled, centralized, deep state since thousands of years. Every now and then we are trying to do our best, but the military rule in Egypt is have a different understanding of transmissions. Transmissions have a priority for security. That's what they say. And they think that the state should own the air frequencies. The state is most important than the media content. And security is much important than a community media outlet. That's a very, very interesting point of view, but also not easy to conquer, not easy to dialogue with, not easy to convince, not easy to debate. But we're still doing our best to continue.
On April 4th, the Egyptian police force raided the headquarters of Radio Holeitina in Cairo. Without an arrest or a search warrant, the police searched the premises and interrogated staff. One of the questions raised concerned the station's news content and their political affiliations, although the focus of the radio is to broadcast human rights-related news. Mr. Sami was arrested and charged with broadcasting audio and visual materials without a license. However, under Egyptian law, a license for establishing online radio stations or broadcasting materials on the internet is not required. My final interview on community radio in the Arab world is with Daoud Kitab. Mr. Kitab is an award-winning Palestinian journalist and media activist. In 2000, he established AmanNet, the Arab world's first internet radio station. Mr. Kitab also serves as the Director General of Community Media Network, an Arab media NGO registered in Jordan and Palestine. We discussed community radio more generally and its role in a post-Arab Spring era. In your view, what is the importance of or purpose behind community radio?
Well, we've had a problem in the issue of independent media and decentralized independent media, especially, and even more specifically in terms of radio. The Arab region, or the MENA region, if you will, the Middle East and North Africa, went through post-colonial troubles, lots of coup d'etats and revolutions and so on. And in the 50s and 60s, most of these changes occurred when some military officer took over the presidential palace and then took over the national radio station. And radio became a kind of a symbol of sovereignty and government control. And so the newcomers, let us say, made sure nobody else would make a revolt against them. And so they really protected radio, didn't give out any licenses. And for many years, this was kind of frozen, the whole idea of private, individual, independent communities using radio didn't exist. In the 21st century, with the internet and the kind of the development of different means of communications, we've started, going back to radio, and we've discovered how important radio is to people driving, people who don't read, people who need to know news at the moment it's happening. And so there's a kind of a revival of the use of radio. But the new part of this revival is that we're adding the independence of radio. So local communities, individuals, private companies are now owning radio licenses. And actually, the latest Arab Spring, if you will, the turmoil in the Arab world, was even further encouragement for people to create their own community radio stations, because there was no longer a centralized police state that was stopping people from having their own power to speak on their own airwaves. So that really is a kind of, in a very nutshell, what is happening, where radio and television has been controlled by governments, and now there are individuals, groups, and companies and communities that are owning their own airwaves.
In your opinion, what types of challenges are currently being faced by these groups in regions such as the Middle East and North Africa in developing and sustaining a community radio movement?
I mean, obviously, the main challenge is to actually continue, because in many countries where there is chaos, the community radio is doing well. But once the security situation is centralized and controlled, authorities take power again, they will try to kind of retake the issue of the idea of issuing licenses for radio. We think that the genie is out of the box and that we will never get back to the pre-Arab Spring days, but this is one challenge. It's just that to stay afloat as a community broadcaster. The second, which you alluded to, which is the sustainability. Now, community media is usually run by volunteers, by nonprofits, and the economic situation where people would be benefiting from corporate social responsibility and other factors doesn't really come into the radio scene. So this is a major problem for sustainability, but people are quite ingenious in creating new streams of revenue using internet, satellite, SMS messaging, productions, different means to augment the cost of producing stations and producing good radio.
I wanted to talk specifically about your work in Jordan and Palestine. How has the political history of these two different countries impacted the course of development taken by community stations?
You know, I kind of grew of age in Palestine during what we call the First Intifada, where local communities, in a way, liberated major cities and, you know, populated areas. And one of the things that happened in Palestine during the Intifada years was that along with this liberation of major cities from the occupiers, we immediately filled the vacuum by creating local radio and local television. And when I moved to Jordan, I tried to bring that experiment or that experience with me, and I've tried to start, but I discovered that there's a very strong centralized government that doesn't allow private radio and TV, and so I did, you know, what anybody who wanted to do radio and TV could when you don't have a license, which is I went online. And we created the first internet radio station, and we started a campaigning and advocacy to try to get the government to change their policies. And sure enough, in less than 5 years from when we started our internet radio, we got a license to have an FM station, and that actually has become our main kind of flagship. Now, since then, we've also created a project called Aswatana, which is a regional program that covers seven Arab countries with funding from Sweden, where we have established seven community radio stations and been funding them for 3 years. And that's been a really good operation because it's created role models in every country for people to try to emulate and to see the experiments and to basically not to be dependent on a kind of revenue to keep the station going. So this is a nice project. Since then, we also helped create, with the help of the EU, a fund, an Aswatuna fund, which will be giving small grants to local community broadcasters to keep going. So this is the effort that we're trying. We're still a long way from where we want to be, but right now we've succeeded in introducing the concept of community radio. We still haven't introduced the actual status of community radio in most Arab countries, but we're in the process of basically introducing the concept and change the local law so that the countries can give licenses to a community radio without, you know, charging them very high fees, license fees that they would for a commercial station. Right now, my station, for example, is run as a community radio. We don't make a profit, but we have to pay very high license fees because we're basically using a commercial license to produce a community radio station. This is not a very healthy situation because it's not sustainable. And we're pushing the government of Jordan to change the law so that they can give us a waiver on the $40,000 a year license fee, which, you know, kills your ability to raise money, because all your money has to go to pay the license fee cost.
I'd like to continue the discussion that you mentioned earlier in terms of internet radio. Do you see internet radio eclipsing traditional FM radio in the future, especially with regard to community media? Or is digital broadcasting kind of a transitory step in establishing a community-based FM presence?
For me, it's a transitional step. The beauty of internet radio is that it allows you to experiment in a real environment of a radio station with, you know, staff and reporters and newscasts and music and everything, but initially with a very small audience. so your mistakes are not that big, and you're not seen by the public as making terrible mistakes. So it's a great opportunity to train and in real life circumstance.
An article you wrote earlier this year, which appeared in the Jordan Times, cites that out of the 6,000 frequencies available to North Africa and the Middle East, only 10% of those are being used. So what's inhibiting this use by community broadcasters, and what steps need to be taken?
Governments in the Arab world, especially the centralized governments, authoritarian governments, are very reluctant to give away the license. They feel that this is a source of power and the source of their own political existence. I mean, you have a country like Egypt with 92 million people, and yet not a single FM radio station exists. There's one or two commercial stations that were given during the Hosni Mubarak years and renewed under the new powers that are strictly music and licensed with very light social programming. So basically, countries have national radio and television stations owned and controlled by governments. And they basically say, we don't need to give out these licenses. So you have lots of communities, therefore, left without any local media or any independent media. And the country says, you know, if you need media, we'll cover that for you. And as you know, governments are not very good in giving independent information. So the cycle of government control continues. And this is why 90% of available airwaves are not available to people, because governments just... I'll give you an example in Jordan. To get a license in Jordan, you have to apply. It's very difficult. All kinds of documents are requested. But then to actually get it approved, the entire government, the cabinet, has to approve it in the government. And the law allows the government to say no, without explaining why. So my company, for example, my organization, applied 3 times for a radio license, and 3 times we were rejected, and 3 times we asked why, and we were not told why. So governments in general don't, in this part of the world, don't give away the license very easily, and it has to do with the politics. If you have a reformist government, if you have a genuinely democratic government, you have ease of giving licenses, and if you have a restrictive, semi-authoritarian government, then you have semi-authoritarian policies as far as the licensing of radio stations and TV stations and so on.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the Arab Spring, do you feel these revolutionary movements of 2010, 2011 had a lasting effect on community-owned stations in terms of their organizational structure or the content that they produce?
You know, they benefited the sector unknowingly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they ever really thought about it, and I've rarely seen any revolutionary statement talking about the need to provide licenses for community radio. You don't see that. It's not part of their revolutionary rhetoric. But, you know, without knowing it, they basically helped all of us by once the centralized government fell, then it became very easy for decentralized local powers to grant licenses for local radio and TV stations. So the short answer is, unfortunately, no. Unfortunately, the revolutionary powers have not really thought enough about the independence of media. Or maybe they thought, but not a lot has been said, and it's not really part of their priorities.
Mm-hmm. I want to shift gears a little bit. Some of your recent work has involved the rebuilding of a progressive women's radio station on the Gaza Strip that was unfortunately destroyed in an Israeli assault this past summer. Tell us about this station.
Yeah. As I told you earlier, we created the Aswatuna Fund, and over the recent years, we've cooperated with like-minded people around the world who are interested in supporting community radio. One of these organizations is called Community Media Solutions in the UK and in England, and they give support to small efforts and small entrepreneurs in Palestine, and 6 local radio stations were established. Initially, all of them were established as internet radio, and one of them is called Nisa Gaza, the Women of Gaza, and it started up as a local dream of a woman journalist who wanted to set up a radio station that deals with women's issues, having men and women serve in it. And they really, in a very short time, did very well. They got sponsored, local sponsors, and they produced programs, and it was quite an active station, even though it was still on the internet. And then the war in Gaza came, and in the last days of the war, people living in the building where the station is based, I mean the different companies, were told to evacuate, and nobody knew why. So people left, you know, their company, their building. And a day before the war ended, the Israelis, probably trying to improve their negotiating power with the Palestinians, literally bombed this building down to stones, and brought down a 14-story building, including the studios of this Internet Women's Radio Station. I've tried to help this women's station. We've been writing about them, and we helped them set up a crowdfunding program on using Indigo. So if you're really interested in supporting Nisa Gaza, I encourage your listeners to go to Indigo and put Gaza Women's Radio, and hopefully you can contribute something to help these women go back and carry out their dream. They want to go this time immediately to FM if they can get enough money to reestablish their radio station.
So is there anything else that you would like us to talk about?
I would like that our friends and colleagues around the world, obviously, you know, their help and support is very helpful and useful, but we really would like them to have their governments put pressure on our own governments to liberate and to ease the restrictions on licensing of local media. This is the biggest obstacle we have, is that there is no really enabling legal environment to exist as community radio, and it's basically a law. Once there is a law, then we would be much better off in supporting local community radio stations.
How can our listeners help out with that process? What would you recommend that they do?
They can write to the governments. They can write to the White House to put pressure on Arab countries or countries in the Arab region to ease the licensing and to pay attention. I mean, they should speak out on the issue of the need for the freedom of the communities to have their own voices heard by their own radio stations.
From Tunisia to Egypt to Jordan to Palestine, community radio faces a whole range of obstacles, expanding FM frequency use and wrestling FM control from government monopolies to independent broadcasters is only the beginning. As Daoud Kitab mentioned, the Arab Spring helped introduce the concept of community radio to the Middle East and North Africa, but establishing the status of community media and ensuring that stations remain on the air will involve easing the application process for FM licenses and developing sustainable, affordable models of broadcasting. The introduction of internet radio, as exemplified by Radio Holaytina and AmanNet, has led to broadcasting which bypasses a good deal of state fees and legal restrictions placed on independent media sources. But this internet revolution should not be seen as a final step. It should be seen as a transitory step toward the development of free, innovative radio operating on the FM dial, fostering an alternative media environment, airing political and social material which challenges government censorship, is a freedom CKUT has enjoyed. This freedom needs to be extended to the Middle East and North Africa. Tunisia serves as a model for independent radio in this region, but tackling radio independence will take on different approaches in accordance with the country and community these stations serve. Anything less than the liberty to air what independent broadcasters want is unacceptable.